So now we'll move on to the next case of the morning, which is 03-1887, Commonwealth Insurance against Stone Container. Mr. Samuels?
Good morning. Lawrence Samuels, counsel for Stone Container Corporation. May it please the court. This is a case about the interpretation of an exclusion in an insurance policy. The district court made two fundamental errors in its analysis of the case. First, in denying coverage, it read two words in an exclusion in complete isolation from the remainder of the exclusion and the rest of the policy. And two, the court completely ignored the undisputed objective extrinsic evidence that the rupture exclusion, which the court relied on for denying coverage, is inapplicable to Stone's explosion loss. Stone contends that IRI's binder declarations and combined all risk insurance documents provide coverage for the loss resulting from the explosion of its pulp digester. IRI concedes, as it must, that Stone's digester exploded and that the explosion exclusion contained in IRI's all-risk policy does not exclude explosions of pulp digesters.
But the problem is, even if you look at the opinion this court issued in 1999, we've seen aspects of this case from time to time here. The language that Judge Posner continuously uses is an explosion because of a rupture or an explosion as a result of a rupture. And the idea, I think, that you need to discuss is the fact that there can be a rupture without an explosion, but there can be a rupture that's followed by an explosion, or there could be an explosion without a rupture. And I think the argument is made that this particular policy is simply using those words, and as indeed many of the studies that your client itself undertook called what happened here a rupture, even though this rupture was very, very quickly followed by a large explosion. So if it was a rupture, why isn't it excluded?
Two points about that, Your Honor. First of all, Judge Posner did not find, as part of his decision, that there was a rupture. That issue was really not an issue from the case. He merely picked it up from the statement of facts. What Judge Posner was ruling on were two issues. One was whether the breadth of the definition of explosion and the breadth of the definition of a kind.
But it seems to me that I basically agree with you, but it seems to me the logic of what you're saying is that the issue that was presented to this court in the what I'll call the 1999 opinion wasn't the same as the issue that we have today.
Correct.
So whether he happens to use the word explosion some of the time or he happens to use the word rupture some of the time, neither one binds us today. We're here looking at H, H1, H2, and the present policy.
That's certainly true with one exception, Your Honor. The court did find, following from precast, that the event here certainly was a precast explosion. In other words, what the judge did find in reaching his decision, what Judge Posner found and the panel found unanimously in reaching their decision about the breadth of the word explosion is that what we had was an explosion.
But what if the explosion, looking at H2, and then the final language in the policy is something that is resulting damage caused by the rupture, then why isn't it still under the exclusion, even if there was later on an explosion?
Two reasons. First of all, the expression later on is something absolutely not established in the record. This took place in between a hundredth of a second and a tenth of a second.
But didn't your own investigator report that this pulp digester had become weaker over time, the wall had thinned, and there was a rupture, which, a break, if you will, to use a different word, in the external containment section that then caused the rest of these things to happen?
No. The expert certainly did comment on the weakening of the wall and the repair of the digester wall. No one has been able to determine definitively what the order of events was in that hundredth of a second that you're talking about. There's no doubt that in that instant, the whole digester let go. The top of it unzipped. 21,000 pounds of steel flew 200 feet through steel reinforced concrete. I mean, that happened.
No, I realize it was a dramatic event.
No, but I'm not arguing. Yeah, right. I don't want you to feel I'm trying to say that no use of the word rupture could possibly be applied to this. You could certainly, you know, using a dictionary definition, you could try to get to that number. But what I'm saying is that the court sustained its finding in precast that what we have is an explosion. When we have an explosion of a pressure vessel, when that pressure vessel is unable to contain the energy or contents or pressure that's within it, and it lets go, and there's an immediate and catastrophic release of that energy expanding outward. That's precast, and that's the HSB decision that Your Honor is referring to. There is no question, even our opponents agree, that this meets the precast definition of explosion. It's true. They say, yeah, well, it's an explosion, all right, but they say we should also get to read that it was also a rupture.
But and why can't it be, I mean, why can't it fit under this specific language of H2, rupture of a pressure vessel, and then the exclusion that further says, nor does this policy insure against resulting damage, given the fact that these were independent insurance policies and the language may not have meshed perfectly.
Well, I actually, with all due respect, disagree with each of those statements. First of all, it can't fit under H2 because you have to read H2 in conjunction with the entire policy and the entire exclusion. You're required to. H1 deals with explosions of pressure vessels. Second of all,
it doesn't say pressure vessels in H1 at all.
It does not.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I did misspeak.
Yeah.
It deals with H1 deals with excluded explosions of steam boilers, etc., and as Your Honor points out, does not exclude pressure vessels, which is why we are covered under H1.
The way this is right now, there's a terrible gap in coverage for your client.
Well, there would be if the district court...
As the case stands now.
Yes.
So it doesn't seem to me that this is such an unusual event that wouldn't be covered by some insurance policy here.
It is not an unusual event. The undisputed evidence in the record is that explosions of pressure vessels...
Well, here we have a bunch of insurance companies, and they're saying it's excluded under our policy. It's not covered under our policy. So there's this big gap here.
Well, there's only a gap.
What is the industry... How has the industry responded to this catastrophic event?
Well,
our policy is written today.
In fact, they made no change in their policy language. What they did was to change their internal underwriting guidelines, as is clear from the record, in an effort to take events, explosions of digesters, which had always been covered under the all-risk policy, the one we have at issue here, and to try to shift them to the boiler and machinery side.
But don't you still have your case pending? This is a 54B appeal. So you still have your case pending in the district court against a number of the other second tier, if you will, insurance companies whose policy language more referred to the boy. I mean, there was reason in those, at least the district court thought there were disputed issues of fact as to whether those other policies might have provided the more seamless coverage that Aon told you was getting for you.
Yes, but those policies are for different layers of coverage. So it's not a matter of, you know, well, if we win here or we win there. $28.4 million of our coverage is at stake right here. So to return to the questions that the court's been asking, our position is that when you write an insurance policy, when an insurance company writes an insurance policy, and they deal with explosions in H1, and they deal with bursting, rupturing in H2, and they deal with electrical failures in H3, you know, all the way down to H4, it's not reasonable for them to say, well, sure, it was an explosion, But we're not going to look at H1. We're going to say it's a rupture. The fact of the matter is that H1 would be read out of the policy entirely. If their interpretation is right, they have not given us an example of an explosion of a pressure vessel that doesn't involve the bursting, the rupturing, or the cracking of that vessel. It's incomprehensible that you could have an actual explosion of a pressure vessel without one of those things taking place.
Well, isn't there a causation issue? That's what I was trying to get to this question, because if the explosion happens first and then the rupture is a result of the explosion, then maybe you are under, maybe you then have coverage, because it's not, you don't have the explosion being resulting damage. If it's the rupture first, you could have ruptures that don't have anything to do with explosions. Oh. You could have a little rupture that leaks things out onto the floor, even.
Sure, without question, you could have ruptures that don't lead to explosions. In fact, I would dare say that almost every rupture doesn't, and what I really say is that under the cases in precast, ruptures are not explosions. In other words, if you look at precast defines explosions in a way where they differentiate them from ruptures. When you get that opening up and release of pressure, then you have what's called an explosion. And the case law differentiates them. Our opponents have not pointed to a single case where there was an explosion where they were able to avoid coverage by saying, oh, well, it was an explosion, but it's an excluded rupture. And the fact of the matter is that when we ask them for their case records, we've got evidence that they had paid these under their all-risk policy before. You ask what happens in the industry. With extensive evidence of what happens in the industry, our industry expert, Mr. Sullivan, testified without any opposing evidence by our opponents, that in the industry, it is viewed as an event, an occurrence, is viewed as either an explosion or a rupture, not both. And that this one is indisputably an explosion.
But they challenge that. I mean, they say this one guy who said that was more or less an interested party, and that in fact it's quite possible that it might not be an either-or situation, that you might have considerable overlap in the definition.
Well, with all due respect, I don't think that can be. First of all, the person, Sullivan, is not an interested party. Sullivan is a completely independent expert. Six of their own witnesses testified to the very same result, saying that you would have seamless coverage between the car form and the Hartford steam boiler all risk form, saying that Busenbark and Galway said specifically these belong on the all risk, the car form side. I mean, their own people testified, they said, well, these people in the company didn't agree with these people. But that simply takes you to the point where if their own people can read the policy favoring coverage, if industry experts read the policy favoring coverage, we have several other experts, Mr. Falk also as well, if that's the case, then there is no way that they can show without ambiguity that they can deny coverage under that section of the policy.
Okay, if you'd like to save your rebuttal.
Well, I'll use this one point to deal with the damages. To say that the resulting damage flows from the rupture, I think, is really attenuates the process in a way that doesn't make any sense at all. As Your Honor pointed out, we can have ruptures that don't do much. And here, all the rupture, if even if I accept their argument, it's fair to say that it ruptures and then it exploded. I don't understand how that happens in a hundredth of a second, but in any event, if it were fair to say so, then the rupture made a $250,000 digester no longer commercially usable, so that's $250,000 that would be lost. And then the explosion, I'm not agreeing that there's any then about it, but the explosion did $84 million worth of damage. The rupture by itself could never have caused even 1% of the damage. So to argue that kind of causation is completely attenuated. I mean, it stretches this thing out in a way that is just really not reasonable at all. And in fact, the case law is really entirely to the contrary. The cases we cite in our case, that where you have multiple causation, concurrent causation, if they don't use the language, which they used with regard to other sections, not exclusion H, but with regard to war risk and fire and losses and things like that, they said, well, if there's a covered event and an uncovered event, and no matter what order they come in, we can deny coverage. They didn't use that language here. In one of the sections, they said, we don't pay for damages if they're direct or indirect. They don't say that here. They just say damages caused by an excluded event. The rupture itself didn't cause any damages except the damage to the digester, even if I accept their way of looking at this. You had $84 million caused by an explosion. The explosion is indisputably a covered occurrence. They structured their policy to treat these occurrences separately, put them in separate sections, and they read together. All the respect.
Okay, thanks very much. Mr. McElroy?
May it please the Court, Jared McElroy on behalf of Industrial Risk Insurers. In seeking to overturn the decision of the Court below, Stern Container is faced with insurmountable obstacles. In the first place, as Judge Wood pointed out, this Court, in connection with the prior litigation involving Hartford Steam Boiler and Stern Container, determined that the loss involved an explosion resulting from a rupture of a pressure vessel.
But that really just restates the question, doesn't it? Because another thing Judge Posner wrote is basically, get real. I mean, if this wasn't an explosion, what could be? Yes, there's an initial event, but don't we at least have factual issues about whether there was some internal explosion that caused the rupture to happen, that caused this whole thing to blow apart and kill people? And
no, there's no dispute over that, Your Honor. I think all the experts were in agreement that this case involves a rupture or bursting of a pressure vessel. If you look on page 25 of our brief, we do cite references to the record in terms of Stone Container's own experts who conceded that there was a rupture or bursting of a pressure vessel, and they all agreed that this involved a blevy, which by its definition required that there be a rupture or bursting as an initiating factor. And this is quite apparent from the reports and the deposition testimony of the author of the Packer Engineering Report, Mr. Bigelow.
And what if there is, surely you can agree that there could be ruptures or bursting or cracking or burning or bulging without an explosion?
Yes.
They happen all the time.
Happens all the time, Your Honor. But the point about the exclusion here is, as just the Court held, this was not only a rupture, but also a bursting of a pressure vessel. And the problem is, if you look at the language of this exclusion, there's just no way that this event isn't excluded. It expressly says the policy does not insure
them. Yeah, we know.
What the language is. But the critical thing is, as Your Honor pointed out, there's this tail language. Nor does this policy insure against resulting damage to property, and then carves out two exceptions.
So what's the resulting damage from the rupture as opposed to the resulting damage from the explosion that happens a nanosecond later?
The resulting damage from the rupture is the explosion, and that's apparent from the language of the policy because it carves out an exception for a damage resulting from combustion explosion outside any of the property described in this exclusion. The explosion.
Wait. You said the damages were is the explosion?
The rupture, the damage, the resulting damage from the rupture is the explosion.
But an explosion is not a damage, it's a damaging agent. It doesn't, by itself, it's not a damage. It causes damage.
The exclusion, though, speaks about explosion in terms of a result. Because
it doesn't. It doesn't use the word explosion at all in that final clause, except in the outside of any property combustion explosion. But you're saying that the explosion is resulting damage, and Judge Bauer is saying explosions aren't damage in and of themselves.
Well, except, Your Honor, I think you do have to look at that exception where it deals with the combustion explosion outside of the property.
No, it's damage from other things. Fire isn't damage either. Fire is a thing that damages. Water isn't damage. Water is a thing that damages. Combustion explosion is a thing that damages.
Well, here's the point, though, Your Honor. As Judge Kokora said, the language of the policy excludes ruptures it says it does not insure against ruptures, bursting, and cracking of pressure vessels. Once this court determines that there's a rupture or bursting of this pressure vessel, there's no coverage for the event. Trying to parse this out between, oh, there's certain damage that resulted from the explosion versus the rupture doesn't make sense. As Judge Kokora stated, this does not deal with rupture in terms of saying it has to be the direct cause of all the loss. So if we follow what Judge Bauer was saying, and we say we start with the rupture, and then we have the explosion, and as a result of this rupture that results in an explosion, there's damages, you still start with the premise that there was a rupture or a bursting, and the policy doesn't insure against that. It's not covered under the exclusion.
Does this policy actually insure against anything, given your reading of it?
Yeah, it does, Your Honor, because there's certainly ruptures that don't involve explosions.
They're excluded, though, right? So it doesn't cover that. Doesn't cover all these explosions. It doesn't cover all these ruptures. Were you just sort of collecting this $3 million for profit?
Obviously, there are events that fall within the scope of
the law. The insurance company's general motto, we're in business to collect premiums, not to pay claims.
Well, that's not true. One thing to keep in mind with respect to this coverage is that, and there's the issue of gap that was raised with respect to the coverage, but this is a situation where you had two independent policies, a boiler and machinery policy issued by Hartford Steam Boiler and an all-risk policy issued by Industrial Risk Insurers. As Sun Container's own broker liability expert pointed out, there's always a potential for a gap in coverage when you have two entirely different policy forms, and that's what you have here. The HSB policy and the IRI policy do not mesh with respect to issues surrounding explosions or ruptures of pressure vessels. Now, why did you have a situation where you have these two different policies and a gap in coverage? The reason for it was because of Stern's extraordinary loss history. The coverage we're dealing with is a coverage excess of $20 million. And the year prior to this policy, Stone Container had coverage under a single policy issued by Arkwright Insurance Company.
Are you, by the way, the only insurer for this tier of liability in this case, or at some point would there be others that insured this tier?
There are some other insurers at this tier that provided other coverage. They're still litigating the case.
Right, no, I understand those things, but there was Lloyd's out there someplace,
right.
And there are all these other companies that the district court finds their remaining issues of fact. He denied summary judgment on quite a few of them. But you are unique in the set of risks for this tier.
We unique, Your Honor, in that we have this exclusion H2.
But you wrote an all-risks policy for a certain tier of coverage.
Yes.
Which actually is not an all-risks policy because of these exclusions, but it was called an all-risks policy. Is there anybody else who was covering the things that you said you were covering?
Your Honor, there are other all-risk insurers. They're the ones that are still litigating with Stone Container in the court below. And Lloyd's, Your Honor, was also another insurer that was involved. But what I was going to mention is that there are two ways to avoid a potential gap in coverage. One of them is to have the policy like Arkwright did that covered both boiler machinery risks and all the all-risk property risks. And Stone Container had coverage below $20 million. It was exactly that. And they got paid the $20 million for the loss. There was no gap in coverage there. The other way to avoid a gap in coverage is to have an endorsement in the all-risk policy that says we cover what the boiler machinery policy doesn't cover, and we exclude what the boiler machinery policy covers. An endorsement like that was in the London policy. There is no dispute that kind of endorsement was not in this policy. It's important to keep in mind that Stone Container's broker wanted to get a comprehensive policy that covered boiler machinery risks and all risk losses because they understood, as Stone Container did, there's a potential for a gap in coverage when you have two entirely different policy forms. IRI was not willing to write a policy that covered all risks, including boiler machinery. Stone Container's broker went to other insurers that were similarly not willing to do that, and that was because the Stone Container had this very bad loss history, and this tragic accident is further evidence of that. The other point I'd make about this gap in coverage
I had understood that the broker was just, at least from that prior lawsuit, the statute of limitations case, that the broker was hadn't negotiated these things or hadn't sought that sort of coverage.
Oh, Your Honor, the record is clear that the broker, we do cite that in our brief as well, Your Honor. The broker was definitely interested in obtaining comprehensive coverage that did not involve these two independent policy forms. And the testimony, in effect, is they did the best they could with what they had. And even Mr. Alford, the person involved with risk management for Stone Container, admitted that there was a potential for a gap in coverage with different policies, but acknowledged, because of Stone Container's loss history, that it didn't wasn't able to obtain that. The other point I'd say about this gap in coverage argument is that an argument that there's seamless coverage and there has to be coverage under this policy because the court's already ruled there's no coverage under the HSD policy, that argument is inconsistent with Stone's own conduct. Stone Container's broker recommended that Stone Container bring a claim against all the insurers and invoke the joint loss provisions. Stone Container's general counsel responded by saying, we can't invoke the joint loss provisions because they don't apply when there's a gap in coverage. If Stone Container truly believed that the HSD policy and the ILF policy provided seamless coverage, it should have sued both at the same time to avoid a situation like we have at this point, where they're arguing there has to be coverage under the ILF policy because this court already ruled there isn't coverage under the HSD policy.
But that's not quite their argument. Their argument is that this court interpreted the event as a whole to be an explosion, and if it's an explosion of a pressure vessel, then it's not a rupture, bursting, cracking, blah, 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 of a pressure, and pressure vessels don't appear in H1. And that takes you back to the general coverage of the all risks policy. That's what I understand at least their argument to be. I know that you dispute that. But
yeah, and I'm going to return, though, again to the language of the policy, because Judge Bauer, I think, made a good point, and that is that we have a rupture, and it says, nor does this policy insure against resulting damage. The significant point, though, about the combustion explosion in reference in the tail language there is that the exclusion clearly contemplates the possibility that you have a rupture and an explosion. And the point is, the policy doesn't cover ruptures or bursting, which we had in this case. Now, keep in mind that Stone Container is making the argument, their basic argument is that rupture and explosion are mutually exclusive terms. Now, that's inconsistent with this court's prior opinion, where Judge Poser did say, use the term rupture as the resulting in the explosion, and he was correct. It's supported by all the technical information by Stone Container's own admission. But once you have that, the exclusion itself, and Judge Posner's opinion makes clear that explosion and rupture are not mutually exclusive terms. Now, Stone Container recognizes the problem with the language in the policy, because what they say is that the exclusion doesn't apply because the exclusion uses the term, they use the term damages. And what they do is, the tail language says, nor does this policy insure against resulting damage. And they change damage to damages. You can see that on pages 17 and 29 of their brief. They attempt to change the language, and so they argue that obviously monetary damages is what's being referred to in this exclusion when it talks about resulting damage. Damages is not the term that's being used there, and it's somewhat offensive that they change the policy language in advancing their argument. The other argument I think that is somewhat offensive is the argument that they are disturbing is the argument that this didn't involve a rupture. Now, in the prior litigation before HSB, Stone Container repeatedly referred to this as a rupture. It's lawyers, it's loss control people, it's engineers, and in-house and outside counsel and risk management people all refer to this as a rupture. Now, when they lost in their suit against HSB, they were faced with this policy that excludes coverage for ruptures or bursting, and so they reversed their position.
Hold on a minute. We can have a rupture without an explosion. I think you're that sort of.
Yes.
Can you have an explosion without a rupture?
Potentially. Yeah, I think that the definition of explosion would typically involve some kind of breaking apart. So
that is to say, if there was an explosion, there has to be a rupture.
I don't know that that's necessarily correct.
Tell me a case of where it isn't.
Well, if you take a situation where you have a vessel, where you have what I call a firecracker type of an explosion, where the explosion is initiated by some kind of combustion within the vessel, I do think that eventually there would be some kind of bursting that would be involved with the event or rupturing. But in terms of the initiating...
So if there's an explosion, there has to be a rupture.
I think there would have to... An explosion, at some point, you would have some kind of a rupturing of the vessel at some point in the event. But the point is, the terms are not mutually exclusive, and Stone Container's contention that the event does not involve a rupture in this case is simply defies common sense and totally contrary to their position they've advocated.
But it also, in some sense, defies common sense to think that this wasn't an explosion. And if it's predominantly an explosion, then pressure vessels, for whatever reason, were not included in H1.
That's true. They're not part of H1. We've never contended that exclusion...
Yeah, no, I'm just saying you wrote the policy and you didn't put pressure vessels in H1. You obviously could have if you'd wanted to, but you didn't.
They didn't, Your Honor, but we're not claiming H1 excludes. It's H2.
I know, but I'm just saying if one thought that, at least in this instance, the dominant characterization of what happens here is an explosion, then H2 doesn't apply.
Oh, it does, though, Your Honor, because the exclusion is that the policy does not insure against rupture, bursting, or cracking.
So what if there's a rupture of like a quarter of an inch, and then the whole thing just blows?
Because the rupture, bursting, cracking is excluded under the exclusion. The language doesn't say it doesn't apply if it's predominantly an explosion. It says there's no coverage for the... Whenever you have a rupture, bursting, or cracking of a pressure vessel, it's excluded under this exclusion.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honor.
We'll give you a full minute, Mr. Samuels. I think you're running short.
Thank you. Very quickly, first, just to say, the policy is clear on one thing. An explosion is an occurrence, not a damage or damages. It's listed, it's referred to in there as an occurrence, it's just as a rupture is an occurrence, just as the other occurrences. So that takes care of that. Second of all, Your Honor was interested in why H1 was written the way it was written. There's a reason, and the record is completely clear, and their own witnesses testified to this. H1 was written to exclude from the policy explosions of objects that were covered in the boiler machinery policy and to provide insurance for those that were not. That is, they were to match up without a gap. That's what their own people said. That's what the industry experience says. There is not to be a gap. It's very interesting. He goes on and on about what the people at Stone did use the word rupture. They didn't. Certainly some did. No question about it. But he doesn't comment at all about the fact that his own people, including people all the way up to the executive vice president level, said, this loss is covered by the CAR form, by our CAR form. And that's the way it was intended to be. There would be no commercial insurance for digesters without it.
All right. Thank you very much. Thank you to both counsel. The case will be taken.